So, how was your day yesterday? You came back. Obviously, it was reasonably okay. Anyone has anything to that they just want to say that was remarkable enough to say of yesterday? Please. Yes. But a lot reduced. That's enough. That's enough. Right. It's significant. That's how it is. It's not that, okay, we get it and now we're perfect. It's never going to be that way. But one of the ways the Buddha described it is that, you know, we're conditioned and everything's conditioned by all these conditions, and we can contribute to conditions, so we can help. And that's it, we aren't going to switch ourselves into being saints, but we can actually begin to gradually change these conditions and become more alert, a little more available, it's reducing. It's a process, it's an ongoing life path. It's called a path because it's you're going onwards with the time. So thank you. I know, yeah, please.
So yesterday we had our meeting, and everything was
really
helpful. And I have two brothers arriving today, and the wind is, they're coming from Europe for 3 days, and my mom has Alzheimer's. So it's like, okay, the wind's being stirred up, and I have the same thing, the doubt, the trust, the, okay, and everybody, let's just be kind. Let's, like,
great.
Get the love and the peace.
Yeah.
But you never know,
what nope.
am I going to say, and how kind am I going to be?
No, you never know. We don't know. We do not know. Did I tell you this thing yesterday? I didn't tell. I told in a small group, maybe. One of the teachers, I was sitting in a retreat. His name is Eugene Cash. I love him for this. He said, you know, in the middle of a Dharma talk, he said, "What the truth is, we're all really blind baby moles groping towards the light." And it's just such a fantastic image. And we're groping, and we're not at it. We don't know. We're groping. But we're learning skills with which to do that better. It's a process.
Also, when you mentioned, like, we're all 3 year olds or 5 year olds or 8 year olds, and I always think, you know, until we're tainted by the world, and then we're all, like, our stuff is all coming up.
That's right. Always. That's always. Yeah. Thank you. Good. Thank you. Hi. Yes. Aha, to see it that way. Grandpa mind. I know you probably all can't hear. So anyway, you were just mentioning that the image of the grandmother mind, the two minds, the child mind, and then the one in the background overlooking, in your case, grandpa mind, was just a way that clicked with you that you can understand. This is one of the things about what's so useful about having the teachings from different teachers, because people just have different little takes, and it just like different things land for different. We're all so different. We're all wired slightly differently, going through different things in life. So it's really helpful. Yeah, great. Okay. Good. Anyone else? Anything you want to share? You don't have to, but please.
When I went to bed last night, the wheels start turning as always, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I've had many ways of trying to, you know, bring it. So, just get rid of it, eventually. So I really appreciate the
Yeah.
And that came in, and it allowed this peace.
Yes. Yes. We don't have to stuff it. You know, it's like, no, good. Shh. Yeah. Gently, gently. It's so gentle. I went back to stay with my son last night because he lives here, right? So this new grandson, Van, his name. And so I, when I'm there, I take him and they go to sleep. So I had him all. I had him for 4 or 5 hours last night. Shh. Oh. Shh. Yeah, yes, yes. They're sweet. Our minds are sweet. They're trying to be helpful. They think that they can fix everything. Of course, they can't. They're just little kids. But they try, and they mean well. And I was saying in a small group yesterday, but this is the right time to say it, that a colleague friend of mine, when she has her little ones acting out, you know, she goes, thank you, thank you. She just like imagines that they're little children trying to be helpful, but they're really little. And then she pats them on the head and says, thank you, thank you, but we've got it covered. Grandpa mind is handling everything. You don't have to work so hard at trying to fix everything and figure it out and plan and worry and thank you. But thank you, because they're not the enemy, this neurotic mind. It's not a thing that you have to worry or feel ashamed or want to stop, but there's another way. We have another way. You can take the weekend off now. I call mine my executive assistant. Yeah. The self. Remembered, yes. Yes, and we don't even think of that. We don't even think of reflecting back. We think it's all about the world out there. But yes, self-care. And that shh is just, it's okay, it's okay. Thank you. Good. Very good lead in to the first thing I'm going to talk about this morning. So there's one of the words in Pali that is used a lot by the Buddha. Appamada. Appamada. When there's an A in front as a prefix to a word, it's the negation of the meaning of the word. So anatta is not atta, which is a self. Anatta is no self, etc. It's used all through the language, Pali, the way Pali is constructed. So pamada, the word pamada means, I've got all kinds of translations for it. It means negligence. Or I've got indolence, laziness, not bothering. It means the way we behave when we're intoxicated, kind of like slap happy and too loose. It means befuddled, not clear, not onto it, you know. So here's a couple of sentences of descriptions. We spend a great deal of time stumbling about, distracted, veering from one thought to the next, forgetting what we'd intended to do as soon as a more diverting possibility presents itself. Anybody? Or we keep finding ourselves swept away by habitual impulsivity and then acting against what we've carefully judged to be our better interest. Anybody? It's kind of like we're just not quite on top of it. Excuse me. And so we just get sort of pulled and we fall and we trip and we crash into things a bit. And so it's sort of sloppiness. So this is what pamada means. And apamada means not that. It means careful and attentive. Now, appamada is often translated and has historically, and this is a thing that I like to remember, is that the first translations of the Pali into the English language were by the gentlemen explorers of the Victorian Empire expanding. And so in Victorian's era, their languaging was not quite our language, and it was a lot more moralistic and sort of judgmental. And so the philosophers had more of that sort of tension. And so there are two words which are beautiful words, hiri and otopa, describing the inner, when our conscience pricks, you know, that feeling of like, oh no, I shouldn't have done that, that sort of remorseful feeling, which is actually, it's what protects the world, the Buddha calls it. But the translation from those Victorian gentlemen was moral shame. And moral dread, which sound pretty harsh, but really it's just like to be able to have a conscience is a wonderful thing. I mean, you know. So in the same way that pamada has often been, apamada has been translated as vigilance and heedfulness, which are true translations. They're good translations, but they have a kind of heaviness, I find. And I agree with Stephen Batchelor, who has a whole little section in his recent book about this. He likes to use the word carefulness rather than vigilance, you know, because vigilance, you can get a little bit judgmental with yourself over, you know, I've got to do it better than this. It's easy to get heavy with yourself about it. And that, to me, is a turnoff about meditation and spiritual life. If it's got that sort of, it's so easy, and for us, and I'm English, you know, to get like, this is not right, you know, this is, to get so critical. It's such a setup to then feel frustrated with ourselves. And when meditation has that flavor to it, it's a chore. And that's not actually going to encourage us. We're going to just go, like, I'm going to actually go party tonight. Instead of like, I want to care for something. Like, but we do care. We care so deeply about so many things. And so care, apamada, care. And care has, you can expand it very slightly in two slightly different ways. One of them is caring, which is holding in the heart, you know. It's like that tenderness. And one of them is careful, which is kind of a restraining of looseness. And they're slightly different, but they both go with care, don't they? And so apamada, if we can think of that as being careful and being caring, then with our minds, with our words, with our actions, you know, with our behaviors, you know, with the way we think about things. Let's be a little careful here. And that's what's being invited as we become more conscious. That's what it means. As we become more fully alive, we're more careful. We're not necessarily more uptight. We're not necessarily more, you know, judged. It's not struggly. But it definitely is an application of energy. It's like, I want to do this really, really well, because I want to really know what's happening here. When we really care, we want to live well. We want to love well. We want to behave well. We want to do a good job here. We want to not cause pain and harm and confusion and be drunk and, you know, carried away by into the labyrinths of emotion, as one of the other German teachers says. I want to tread with care on my life and do a good life. I want to not regret it. So that is a lovely translation. But the thing about this word, apamada, the Buddha said in many, many, many of the teachings that that is an overarching principle of the practice. It isn't just one more of those emotions to be aware of, care, caring. It's actually the whole principle of the whole thing. It's what he calls the elephant's footprint. And when they use that simile of the elephant's footprint, it's the biggest footprint, and all other footprints can fit into that footprint because it's one of the biggest ones. And so it's a big principle with which we're doing what we're doing. So I love that word, and I use that word a lot, caring and careful. And it's that same thing you were mentioning, is self-respect, self-care. All of that. And it's others care for our lives. So vigilant attention, being careful and caring. The opposite of indolence, distracted, reactive, muddled, contradictory, fuzzy-minded, and incontinent. I think about continence and incontinence. Incontinence is leaking. You know, there's like bitchy little thoughts that leak out, those clumsy little words that leak out. This is a really, you know, whoops. And so it's like, how to not be so incontinent. It's like, okay, let's exercise that sphincter, shall we? You know, you know, it's so leaking out. It's not we're deliberately saying the mean things, you know, there's no, we can't blame it, but it just is a little careless. Let's be a little more careful, right? That I love that whole principle. Careful, lucid, contained and caring for one's own condition and that of others. The Buddha said in the Dhammapada, apamada, that word is the path to the deathless. Carelessness is the path to death. Careful, caring, the careful and caring do not die. The careless and the uncaring are as if already dead. So, to live in such a way is to be conscientious. It's another word for conscientiousness, right? When we're conscientious, we take care of things. Conscientious, to be alert to the vicissitudes and challenges that life presents, as well as one's reactions towards them. And that's the key thing, too, in meditation, that mindfulness meditation reveals there's what happens and there's how we respond. And it's the how we respond part that we need to notice, but we tend to focus on what's happening. So we need this, we need to shift attention from what's happening, which is significant, but we think it's the significant part, to and how am I responding in this moment, or reacting. Reacting, of course, is this automatic, uncaring, triggered, and responding is a somewhat chosen, somewhat directed. And so responding to me is like, okay, that is the key, and I can make some choice about my response, and therefore my contribution, and therefore the unfolding, some contribution, only some, because there's everything else and everyone else and all the weather changing. And the Buddha said that to be more caring, to learn this principle of apamada, apply it, the best way to learn it is being around people who are skilled. It's the most important thing, because it's like we're like children. We're all like children all the time. And how we learn, you can't learn caring by reading about it, by hearing about it, or by thinking about it. You learn it by being careful, being with people who are careful. It's the it's best learned by the modeling of it, which is why the Sangha is the third refuge and the most important of the refuges. Choosing wisely your company, the company you keep, and keep some of your company, people who are not drunk, incontinent people, you know, muddled people, people who are too caught up in their stuff and they're unable to actually be responsive, but they're just being reactive. We need to keep in our circle those who are caring people and careful people. And it just flows over, because just little things, this pops into my mind, it's a funny thing. Why I tell this story, I don't know, but it's an example in my life. Tiny little thing. So I was in a relatively new relationship many years ago. And my partner was untidy. And he would just put stuff all over the place. And he was always losing things. And he was always like doing this, like, and he would be doing this on a table full of papers and like looking for things. And so I said to him, you know, when I put something somewhere, I know I'm putting it there, and so I know it's there, so I don't lose it, so I go back because I remember where I put it, because I put it there deliberately. He's like, you're kidding. Yeah. Enough said. If you care for something, I'm quoting Stephen Batchelor, if you care for something, you will guard it and protect it, whether that object of your care is a moral virtue, a child, or an endangered species. In each case, your care manifests as a yearning to keep it safe and free from harm. Okay, so present awareness has that quality. I'm continuing on what I was talking about yesterday, because that's what our weekend is focusing on, this how to be fully present with now, this piece of with carefulness. So I'm reviewing slightly here, mindfulness, and some of us know mindfulness really well, and some of us still are learning what all it means to be mindful, to be present, to be in the present rather than lost in thought world, which is either imaginary or making up the future or the past. dreaming about something, but being fully right now with what is happening, period, not adding commentary. It's just like, this is what's happening, knowing it. The analogy that's taught, brilliant analogy, is a mirror. And when you hold a mirror up, the mirror reflects exactly what's happening, but it makes no comment. It isn't a mirror that's a distorting mirror, or that's a rose-colored mirror that makes it look rosy and glowy, or twisted or too big, like the circus. I remember as a child going and standing in front of mirrors that made you tall or fat, or just pure. Just sees, this is what's happening. Mindfulness is, this is it. That's what's going on. Period. No comment. The other thing about it is that when mindfulness is saying this is what's going on, there's that grandpa present who knows what's going on. Like, oh, that's what's going on, that's what's going on. Which includes what's going on in here as well as what's going on out there. Instead of, it's not just commenting on the world, it's this is going on. And because of that, when something pleasant comes up in our experience, mindfulness can say, this is nice. Instead of, ooh, I want that, which is the incontinent reaction of when it's pleasant. It's like, ooh, 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 like little children do. A lot of you know who James Baraz is, a teacher. So he has a son who's in his 30s now, but when I first knew, James was an early teacher of mine. His little son, Adam, was like 2 and 3. He tells a story. He told a story all those years ago of his little son, age 2 or 3, and he said, this is a perfect example of, this is an incontinent mind. He didn't use that word, a mindlessness. He offered his son, he had a little bowl of strawberries, fresh, new, the first of the year, you know, they're the first fruit that's available, and he gave this little boy a strawberry. So it's like the first time he'd ever consciously had a strawberry in his mouth. So he had this big strawberry in his mouth, and here in front of him is a bowl of more strawberries. And his mouth is full of strawberry, and he's going like, more, more, more. He can't even enjoy this strawberry because he's already wanting more strawberries. Well, we're kind of like that. But mindfulness, we can actually really relish this strawberry while we have it, and then we can have another one, maybe. So there's less of the push and the pull, the push against when it's unpleasant, because we don't automatically go into the like, oh no, resistance. We go like, this really is hard. Oh, I don't like this. Without being triggered into the oh no state. So it's freeing, mindfulness, that's how it works to free us. There's also, with more mindfulness, less of the meing. I talked about that yesterday, that I need, I hate, I. A thing about thoughts I didn't say yesterday, but I remember doing this, learning this, and then really doing it intensively, particularly one retreat. I was at Hollyhock, and I was not counting exactly, but I was watching thoughts, but I was paying attention to how many thoughts had the word I in them. I like, I want, I think, you know, I can't stand, and it's like, or me, how dare they do that to me, you know, or most of the thoughts that had any sticking power were I or me thoughts. And then there were thoughts like, it's windy, and they didn't stick. They just went, you know, just the those kind of awareness-type thoughts. But the thoughts that had any kind of impact or that stuck around were all I thoughts. Well, with more mindfulness, you recognize that, and they just thin out by being seen. They don't catch you quite. So there's less dukkha, because dukkha is I-ing, my-ing, grasping, chasing, fixing is all about me. And when there's less, when that's seen, it just, there's less, there's more peace. In our modern, I don't know about modern world, in probably human history, our consciousness, untrained, with no meditation training, notices what we're doing. It notices ourselves in terms of what we're doing. I'm doing this, doing our functioning. It doesn't pay attention to the awareness itself, to the state of consciousness. It's all about the task. We're very task-oriented, busy doing, getting rid of, accumulating, rearranging deck chairs on Titanics, rearranging. But not noticing how it's being felt or what the impact is, the inner reality. So, of course, we're changing to do that more and more fully, more and with more ease because we practice and we get better at it. So we including, this is happening and it feels like this. This is unpleasant and I really can feel myself like beginning to resist. Oh, look at that. Watching that dance. The Buddha says, everyone's future well-being arises less by conceptual attachment to views, in other words, thinking about it, and more to mindful awareness. Same thing. So, pointing your attention to the moment between the two things, something's happening and your response to it. That is the potent moment. If you don't notice what's going on in yourself, there's what happens and then it has you. It offends you, it bothers you, it disgusts you, it excites you, it thrills you, it triggers you into some reactivity. If you're aware of how your inner life is going, there's what happens and then your inner life responds in some way. Notice that. That's the powerful moment. When we're heedless, when we're incontinent, when we have no apamada, we just pamada, we get caught. We just get caught in that moment. So don't get tight about it and look too closely and get desperate to try and figure it out. But just when you have that, when you're self-reflective and there's like, how is it in here as I'm moving through life? The interest gets increasingly on how it is in here rather than how it is out there. Because we start realizing this is what makes our well-being. This is what makes the future well-being. This is where I can engage. This is where my consciousness functions. The other is just on automatic and there's no choosing and there's no aliveness in that. We're simply dragged through life, victims of circumstance, you know, triggered. And that's dangerous and it's painful. And it's also kind of dead. It's like there's no consciousness function here. There's no beauty in it. No grace. So as we are able to be more reflective, conscious, mindful, know what, you know, what's happening inside me, we also we're growing that. We're in a position then, a grandma position or a grandpa position, an overview position. And we will see not just that there's a gap between what happens and then how I respond, but we're going to see things that we don't normally see, especially as that becomes an established posture rather than a remembered in a moment to be a grandmother and then it's gone again and I'm back to being the kid, that sort of jerky back and forth. It grows so that it becomes more established. I'm more in that overview place or audience to the show instead of on the stage, always in the drama, but back a little bit, seeing it. So we then start seeing, and many of you know this very well, but this is so powerful. We start to see how things come and go. The rising and falling, the arising of something, it's coming, it does whatever it does and it subsides. When you're involved with everything, it is. It's awful. It's wonderful. It's boring. It's whatever it is. But there's no sort of seeing it with any perspective. From the further back awareness place, mindfulness, we see that everything comes and goes, has its life, is there. We start to seeing it's not just there, it's there because of all these other things that supported it being there, the conditionality of it. But nothing is solid. We start to see things flow. And life becomes a flow. It gets more liquid. And we can flow with the flow because it's going to be there and then it's going to subside and then it's going to turn into something else. And it starts to be a kind of really the way of I feel my life. It used to be like crashing into this and bumping into that and oh, this and very jerky and sort of just a rough ride. And now it's like, here we go. And with that, there's ease inside. There's a kind of graceful, it's like we're dancing. The Buddha, all through the suttas, all through 45 years of teachings, uses water similes all over the place for this reason. Life isn't, you know, like rocks hitting you, or and it feels like that when there's less mindfulness. But when there's more of that perspective. It's like, yep, oh, right. Yeah, super important. Coming and going, rising and falling. Anicca, as S.N. Goenka says over and over and over. You see things are changing, things are moving. Nothing is solid. But when you're in something in that moment, that's all there is, and it's really solid. So when you are frightened or when you're angry, you're so in the grip of it, that's all there is. It's so solid. When you're overviewing it, it isn't. It doesn't have such a grip. It's not so intense. Things become mellower. And even when they're wonderful, they're lovely, but they're not so overwhelming. And the unpleasant is definitely not so overwhelming. So there gets to be with ease, there gets to be more ease, there also gets to be more balance, and there gets to be more freedom. I want to take a moment to talk about freedom. Just play with this word for a minute with me. When we aren't very wise, we think freedom, if we're like children, freedom means, great, I can do anything I want. I can go anywhere I want, I can have anything I like, I'm free, you know, there's no rules. No one's, you know, they don't have to restrain anything. It's we want indulgence of our desires. That's not what real freedom is. That's actually being completely caught in impulse, you know, completely reactive. That it isn't really the true freedom that makes for well-being. Freedom is more, not freedom to, but freedom from unconsciousness, freedom from incontinence, freedom from, I'm talking about incontinence because I was changing diapers last night probably. You don't have to use that word. Freedom from reactivity, freedom from the tyranny of the little mind, to be able to observe it doing its thing and choose, okay, thank you very much. I'm not going to continue that line of thought. That's not going to lead anywhere helpful. That kind of freedom. So it's an empowered freedom. Freedom from rather than freedom to. It's also another, I love words as you can tell, freedom with. Freedom from was almost like, I don't want that. I want to not have that. But freedom in the middle of it, freedom with our lives. To have some freedom in our lives is to have some mastery with our lives. To be able to be with my difficult people and be free from being caught by reactivity. It's not as though we're trying to escape life and go off and be, you know, in some protected cave or something. We can be free with our lives because we're not lost in it. Freedom to choose, to respond. So just think about what you think of as what freedom is. Throwing that out. Oh, this is a lovely little thing. I'm just giving you little tiny things here because I just think they're so helpful. Misappropriation. We appropriate things that are not ours and make them ours. Like, for example, my body. My body should only weigh no more than 150 pounds or whatever it is. It's actually not my body. It's nature's body. And it's part of a bigger picture, and when you do things to it, things will happen to it, and accidents will happen to it. And I don't know whether to say this or not. If my mother had passed gas when she was older, she was so ashamed. And it's like, you know, it's just a fart, Mom. And it's like, hope you're not taping all of this. I'm definitely in baby mode here, but we take things so personally, which aren't personal. We misappropriate, and a lot of what we are as human beings is nature thing. We're nature creatures. We're earth buds, as Wes talks about us. But we take things as though they're mine, and I should, and I shouldn't, and oh no, and I did, and we do that a lot. It's just a thing to. I'm just sowing it as a little seed. See how much you're misappropriating your experiences and turning them into your own. And feeling responsible for them and getting critical of them and ashamed even or disappointed or certainly judgmental about things, which they just are. Minds behave in this way. Hearts behave in this way. Hearts get vulnerable. We get anxious. It just is what happens when we're these natural beings. We don't have to say, oh, I. So many times people speak to me when they're sharing their inner experience, because that's my role, I'm here and we're talking about it, and people say, you know, my mind does this. They go on as though, oh, my mind is this crazy mind. And I'm kind of like, that's what minds do, actually. Not just your mind. It's the human mind. We tell our story about us as though it's like we shouldn't be that way somehow. Are you misappropriating? If you have too much caffeine, you're going to be wired. Is it your fault? It's actually, if you just maybe it was unwise to take all the caffeine, but of course, it's going to get, when you give children too much sugar, they bounce off the walls. They're not bad kids. It's just the combination of children energy and sugar, and then that's what happens. Let's not make things too personal. Anyway, that's just, I know this isn't a weekend where we're focusing on self and not self, but anyway, I just wanted to throw that in for some reason. So the piece I'm getting to for today's practice, we're getting there now, is with more mindfulness, with more awareness, with more deep consciousness, connecting with what's happening from this overview place. It isn't just that there's freedom, there is ease. I love this analogy that the Buddha gives. It's things cool down. You know the phrase we have, hot and bothered? And we calm, cool, and collected. Meditators become more calm, more cool, and more collected. The coolness is, the Buddha talked about the fires of greed, hatred, and delusion. It's a fiery experience to be reactive, to be triggered, to be excited, to be inflamed, to be, you know, angry, to be reactive at all. It's churning. There's friction in it. And when that friction isn't there and there's responsiveness, that flowing with water, water's cooler than fire. There's a coolness. So I'd like to invite you to observe today, and I'm doing this deliberately on the second day because you've already had hours of becoming more settled yesterday, to observe as your mind becomes more soft, as you get less caught, think of it in terms of coolness instead of being burned, you know, by the fire. See if you can experience it in those terms. It's just an idea. It's almost a concept. But there's something soothing about cool. Tranquility is cool. Passion is hot. Friction, tension, hot and costly. And along with this cooling and calming comes concentration, which doesn't happen very quickly. Concentrating is hard work initially because the mind is so scattered and so jumpy, and especially the way we live increasingly in the modern era, multitasking way longer. Not long ago, it's only, you know, a couple of generations ago, that we didn't have so many screens, we didn't have so much electricity going on, so much machinery happening. Things were quieter. People were slower. People did things for longer. Any one thing took longer. It took longer to toast your toast. You know, like, it just took long to do the laundry. You know, every task, you couldn't just whip out a quick, swift thing. You had to brush it, and it's slower. Everything. You had an instant fix or throw it away, buy another one. You had to mend things. Everything was slower. I think of sewing. I think of petty point. I never did petty point. I had to learn it as a child at school, but it wasn't like in my lifestyle, but my mother sewed every evening. She was darning socks and turning hems and putting on buttons, and that's very slow. It's a soothing thing. Well, we don't have a lot of that activity. As soon as we have a moment, we're on to the, you know, and I've got to get a new phone. This one's too slow. The phone I have was given to me by a stepdaughter because she was too slow. Perfectly good phone. So that's, we're going into that. So concentrating is, what it means is being able to settle and stay which means slowing the attention down from that jumpiness. And with that, you know, there's the cooling. With that is the able to observe in an ongoing way. It's the stretching out of the moments of awareness till there are more and more and more of them. Here I am with yet another breath. We can then, believe it or not, be completely present for 200 breaths in a row. You should try it sometime. It's actually shocking to discover that you can be with half a breath at a time, maybe, and then eventually 1.5 breaths at a time, but there comes time when you can just stay with it, and you just stay, and there's no jumping off, there's no distractions. Fantastic. It's actually deep concentration is so delicious, because the piece about concentrating as we are able to be more here, first it's effortful. I want to try and be interested in my breath and look for things which are interesting and maybe count my breaths, and it's effortful. But as the mind quietens, which is what's going on with meditation as we get more skilled, let's say, get the grooves in the brain, it increasingly becomes resting. And then it's like, everything gets calmer, but not by being nailed down. You know, it's not like I'm not going to think. I used to practice like that in my first, 15, 20 years of meditation, were like, nail that thought down, no, don't think. And with practice and with time and with more wisdom, I guess, and experience, the system relaxes. And we see and we learn that that hot reactivity and busyness and churniness is so painful. And that becoming more calm and more present, resting back in grandpa mind, is such a rest for the system. Well, you know that when your body, if your body can't rest, it's going to break down. It's when you're tired, and you need a rest. We have to rest the body. We have to have moments of rest. In this busy world, we have to have good sleep and quiet time. And the same for the mind. You have to rest the mind. It has to rest. It is so busy, going, churning. It needs rest. So we can increasingly find our meditation. It's not like rest, zoning out, becoming a zombie. It's much more caring, but it isn't busy, tight, vigilant, that kind of translation of the word apamada. It's actually resting fully here. Oh. And then there's aha moments, a resting moments. Those aha moments, those sunset moments, they're not like stimulating, like, whoa! They're like, wow. It's quiet moments. Soothing, cool. That's where we go with meditation. The mind becomes the heart. The heart needs to just be soothed, reassured. It's okay. It's okay. You're doing fine, doing the best you can. All of everything goes in the direction of cooling, soothing, calming, resting. And concentration, the ability to stabilize and have everything all pull fully here, 100%, whatever it is you're doing, whatever you're noticing, is resting the attention on the breath coming in and out. It's not holding to it. It's not that much work. It's more just receiving it. Don't need to do anything else. Everything else is work. Let my just being in the present moment rest here. If you can develop that attitude in your meditation, you're going to want to... I want to just take a quiet half hour and let everything collect and relax and really become deeply here. Beautiful, rich, full, relaxed. The fracturedness, the busyness, isn't beautiful. It isn't full. It's a bit here, a bit there. It's uncomfortable, and it's not skillful. It doesn't see clearly. It's a moment of this, and a touch of that, and a glance of that, and an opinion here. And it's not how to meet life skillfully. We have to slow our attention down. Moments of contemplation. Wise ones always have some contemplation in their life. Reflection. We need time. We've got way too speedy. So our meditating time allows not just when we're meditating, but it allows us to have that more space in meeting the moment. Somehow we feel like there's more time to do things. We find ourselves not running and trying to play catch up and the last minute. We find ourselves, oh, lots of time. And even if we're late for the ferry, and I live on an island and my life is governed hugely by the ferries, instead of rushing to the ferry and being anxious about, am I going to make it, I either make it or I don't make it. And then I get another one. Okay, so I have now 2 hours. Because I didn't make that ferry because there were so many people there. It's like everything gets easier to take, so our systems are more relaxed. So of course we have more space then to see more clearly and to be available to people. Everything grows from this. It all grows in the same direction. When you're with wise ones, think of who's one of the wisest people you know. They're not all freaking out and zooming around. There's a calmness to the wise ones. Available. Yes, I have time to listen to you. We want to be in the company of people who aren't rushing. So we become the wise ones. We become calmer. Okay, so those are some of the flavors of today's practice. The collecting of ourselves in the present moment, the quieting down in the present moment, not busy thinking, just this, the resting in it, the cooling of the system. See if you can invite these qualities today as you stay with your present moment, using whatever you use as anchors to gather around, the air moving in and out of your face, or your chest moving, or what it's like to have these amazing hands with millions and millions, trillions of nerves in them that can feel so much. Don't do it with too much vigilance. Do it with because you want to. You care about the quality of your mind and the quality of your heart and the quality of your energy. The quality of your presence, caring to be present fully, calmly, gently, consistently. Okay. Isn't it lovely? Isn't this what we all want? And it's not just delicious, it's actually skillful. It's from this, it isn't just that it feels good. It's how we actually help anyone, everyone. Oh. So let's take maybe 3 or 4 minutes for those who need to stretch or go to the bathroom. And otherwise, we're going to stay here and we'll take the next, say, 15, 20 minutes to sit with this